Hey, what's up, everybody? We're at the S3DA 3D Nationals here at Wren Lake in Whittington, Illinois, we're going to call it.
Yeah, we'll call it that, yeah.
They got a big event out here this weekend. It's running from, they were setting up yesterday, which was Thursday. We're recording this on Friday, and they're running all the way through Sunday. So it's a really good event. Obviously, this is coming to you guys on Monday. But I think it's cool. We were at the national shoot, the indoor shoot, back in February.
Correct.
And we got to talk to some people at that show. I'm sure we will talk to some people today. We'll have some guests on to talk about the event, talk about S3DA, kind of the opportunities that there are for kids within S3DA. And then we'll get into some other conversation as well. We missed the episode last week, so we'll find something to talk about for you guys. We don't really have a complete plan for the day, but...
We're going to take a tour of the place, and I think Steve told me there were 622 shooters for the 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
And I counted, of course, I didn't have my shoes off. I counted from at least 18 states. So this is a big deal.
Yep. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of people here. Like you said, over 600 shooters. So it's a big event. It's a cool event. It's good to see all these kids out here shooting and enjoying the outdoors. So obviously we'll talk about that today. We'll have some other stuff to bring you guys as well. So stay tuned. It's going to be a good episode. This is the Ridge Hunter Outdoors Podcast. All right, we took a little break for lunch there, and we kind of got together a plan for what we're going to talk about today. So the first thing I wanted to get into, and this is something I've been wanting to do on a Full Draw Friday, but I haven't got one out, and I thought I might talk about it this past week, Monday's episode, but I didn't get anybody in to talk about it with. So today I figured, why not? We're going to talk a little bit about clover plots and when you should be worried about them and when you shouldn't. Because I think a lot of times what happens is we go in and do our frost seeding in the winter, which we talk about a lot. And then we just kind of leave it. Maybe you get busy, you don't have time to go take care of it or whatever. And you come back in April, May, even now early June, and you look at your plot and you're like, oh my gosh, what happened?
Everything's growing, weeds included, right?
Weeds and grass. Most of the time, especially on an established plot. Now, if you're talking about a new plot, that's when you really need to get in there earlier and do the maintenance on it and make sure you're keeping it clean, because that young clover needs a chance to grow over everything else. So if it's got too much competition, it's not going to make it. But if you've got a somewhat established clover plot, and you go and you do frost seeding, and you come back, and it looks like that. It looks like it's just all ragweed and flowers and grasses. Take a little closer look, because most of the time that clover is mixed in there too. And a lot of times there's some of it down even underneath, because that grass and the weeds, when the soil does get warm enough for them to start growing, they will grow a little bit faster than some of that clover. So it may just be down underneath there. But as long as you have the clover in with it, even if it's not going to seed yet, you're probably still okay. A lot of times... because it looks bad, and we've had this with clients, you know, with different people that we talk to, when it starts looking bad, you kind of get worried about it and panic. And then the first thing you go in and do is you go in and you either try to be too careful with it, or you try to do too much, and you go in and you mow it and spray it all at the same time, and then maybe you shock that clover too much and it goes dormant, or you kill it all together. Maybe you panic and think, oh, this looks awful, I got to mow it right now, even though there's not any rain coming, so it's going to be dry for 2 weeks, but it looks terrible, so I got to mow it. So you go down and you mow it to like 3 inches, and then it, again, shocks it, and it doesn't come back.
That's easy done.
Yeah.
I mean, it's easy to get ahead of yourself and think, oh, like you said, oh, my gosh, I got to do something right now. Well, sometimes you might need to. Sometimes you might need to take a step back and look at the overall picture of, you know, your long-term plot. Because obviously you're looking for that plot in the fall, so there's time.
Yeah, that's the thing, too, is – as long as you do have the clover in there, take that into consideration, how much you actually do have, and then play it for the fall. Because you can always, as long as you're not letting it get so out of hand that it's shading out your clover, as long as it's still getting sunlight, you're going to be fine. And you can go ahead and mow it that first time you see it and it looks bad, but just make sure there's going to be rain coming. You can go ahead and spray it. Because a lot of guys won't even mow the clover. They'll just spray it. And they let the browse pressure kind of keep it down.
Which obviously browse pressure is going to play a part in it, or should play a part in your overall strategy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because to a certain extent, if you have a small enough plot and a high enough deer density, then you know that they're going to keep it at least knocked down to some point.
Right.
And you're even going to see that with the weeds, because the deer will eat weeds during the summertime. They're not going to eat the grass necessarily, but the ragweed and stuff like that, that's where, again, if it's in there in the summertime, it's not that big a deal, because the deer are going to browse on it. It's just you don't want it to get so out of hand that it outcompetes your clover, in the same way with the grass. And when that stuff goes to seed, that's even another thing to consider. So if the weeds do have flowers on them, or if the grass has a head on it, looks like wheat, and it's got the seeds on the end of it, when you go and mow that, it's going to basically broadcast all that seed out. So really, to me, it comes down to timing of it all. And if it does look bad, and yes, you should mow it. I like to mow and spray at least a couple times each year at most.
So let me stop you right there if you don't mind. So when we're talking about mowing, let's talk about how short we're going to cut this and why we might mow it at different heights at different times, or do we?
Yeah, definitely. So especially if it's gone to seed, you want to knock the tops off of the clover to where you're broadcasting that seed out. So when you start to see the white heads on the clover and they're starting to turn brown a little bit, or if you've got like a crimson clover or some kind of red, which we prefer the white stuff, but the crimson's a decent attractant too for the deer. But if whatever color it is, when you start to see that head out and that go to seed, then you're going to want to knock the tops off of it. The other thing is where you can get in trouble is if you don't mow it low enough. So you can mow it too low, right? So if it's going to be dry again, or really if you let the clover get too tall, mm-hmm. you might want to mow it a couple different times, because if you come in and you've got 10-inch clover and you knock that down to an inch, now it's got to do a lot of rejuvenating to build back up to where it was, because its root system and its stem is still that of a 10-inch plant, right?
Okay.
So I think it's a little harder for that to get back going. It takes more energy. Obviously, it has more roots, so it's going to get more water and more energy, but it's going to take longer. So you also can mow lower if you have shorter clover, because you're going to miss some of it, and you're going to have that underneath of it as well. But the biggest thing to me, and this is kind of what I'm leading into what I wanted to get into, is the timing of it all and if you've got rain coming. So even if you're panicked, even if you think it looks bad, you're going to do way more harm than good if you go in and mow that before a big drought as opposed to when there's rain coming. And I generally like to cut the clover. So I don't know that there's really a level that's just, hey, you're going to mow it at 3 inches every time. But usually I'll try to knock it in half or three quarters of the plant.
Okay.
Knock it off whenever I'm mowing it. And I'm not going to mow it before without a decent chance of a rain coming. Obviously, we don't know for sure. But if it's 50% chance or better of rain a couple days that next week, and we're talking within, 5 to 7 days, even 10 days in some cases. But I'll try to go in there and knock it down. Really, most of the time, I probably do go halfway on the plant.
So
on the actual clover plant.
We're in the middle of June now. So if a guy hasn't done it yet, has he waited too long, or does he just really have to wait on that rain maybe longer than he wants to?
Definitely, I would wait on the rain. You can mow it. Once it gets into mid-July, then I would just wait till the fall. Or I would mow it up into early July with a good chance of rain coming. The reason I say that is, the last couple years, once you get to mid-July, even if you got a chance of rain, the next day it could be gone, and now it doesn't rain for 2 months, and now you've killed your clover plot.
Right, right.
So up into maybe the first week of July, definitely, I would still mow it if you got a good chance of rain coming. But past that, again, don't panic. If the clover's there, it's still going to be there. It's just going to maybe take a little bit extra work in the fall. But get in there, mow it halfway, three quarters of the clover plant, no matter what stage the weeds are at. Because after you mow it, I'm going to give it 10 to 14 days. Wait for that rain. And really, it's going to depend on when that rain is. So if I mow it the day before a rain, and it comes in and it rains that next day, now I'm going to give it 10 to 14 days after that rain. If I mow it and it rains 4 days later, now I might wait and spray again probably 10 days later after that rain, so it's going to be 14 days from when I mowed it, right? The reason for that is, like I said earlier, you're broadcasting all the seed from
right.
the grass and from the weeds. So if I go in there and I do that, and then it rains the next day, and then I come back in and spray it 5 days later, I've probably given the stuff I've mowed down enough time to come back to where the spray chemical is going to be effective on it. But I've not given the seed enough time to germinate and come through the soil to where the chemical will be effective on all that new stuff that I basically just broadcast. So I want to give all that seed that I don't want, all the undesirable stuff. Right. I want to give it enough time to germinate and to sprout into a big enough plant to where when I go back with that chemical, it's going to kill it as well.
Make your chemical a lot more effective.
Exactly. Yeah, you're not wasting any time or money that way.
Right, right.
And then because when you do that, okay, let's say you've mowed it before your rain and you did everything like you're supposed to there, and now you come in and you sprayed it, but you just did it a little bit too early. Your clover can also only take so much, even of the chemical that's not supposed to kill it. It's only going to take so much, like clethodim. It's only recommended like 32 ounces per acre per year. So if I go 16 ounces, which I try to do, 16 ounces an acre, once in the spring, once in the fall. If I do that, well, now I haven't killed all that grass that I just replanted. Now I have to come back in and spray it again. If I do that, then I can't spray it in the fall if anything else comes back, because I run the risk of killing my clover right before deer season. So it's also going to, like you said, it's going to make that chemical way more effective, and you're not going to hurt the clover or the chicory or the alfalfa or whatever it is that you have in that mix that you actually want to grow. So that's a big part of it as well. But, yeah, that's after I mow it, wait for that rain, then wait another almost 2 weeks, up to 2 weeks, for that stuff to germinate. And I'm going to hit it with clethodim. Like I said, 16 ounces per acre, and we usually mix 10 gallons of water per acre, so whatever that comes out to.
Right,
ounces
not much.
Per acre, right. And then I'm going to put, you can use 2,4-DB, which will not kill your clover. You can use more of that, or you can use a little bit of 2,4-D. So your clover will withstand a little bit of regular 2,4-D, but you don't want to put too much of that in there. So I'm only running that like maybe an ounce per gallon, probably not even that much, maybe like a half ounce of that per gallon, which is going to be enough to kill like your ragweed and a pigweed and stuff like that, because it's not real hardy anyway, and it's a seasonal plant anyway, so
right.
If it gets a little bit of that stuff, it's going to die where your clover's going to take it. It might start to turn a little bit, and then when that next rain comes, it'll come out of it. But you can put that in there in smaller amounts. If you got 2,4-DB, then you can go ahead and spray it at the recommended rate. But those are the two that I'm mostly going to use. And I also put Dawn dish soap in it. It works as a surfactant. You can go buy the actual stuff, crop oil, and basically that just helps it stick to the what you're spraying, because the 2,4-D and the clethodim aren't like glyphosate, where when it hits the plant, it absorbs and they're dead. You have to have something to help it stick. So the Dawn dish soap is basically just to help it stick. But that's what I'm going to do after I mow that. I'm coming with those chemicals and spray on my clover plots. And then I'm going to leave it alone until fall.
So when you do that Dawn, can you say you do a plot with Dawn and without Dawn, or your you can see a difference in the effectiveness of the spray when you do that?
Mm-hmm. You'll have some kill with it if you don't use it, but you won't get as it won't be again as efficient.
Again, you're spending $2 on Dawn that's well worth it.
Now maybe you have to come back and spray it again. You spray it twice instead of just once.
Now, how much Dawn would you put in your, say I've got an acre food plot and I've got my 16 ounces and my water and all that. How much Dawn would I put in there? Or whatever else I wanted to use.
Right. I don't know how many ounces on it. Obviously, if you buy the actual surfactant or crop oil, they're going to have the recommended rate on there.
Right.
But for the Dawn dish soap, I want to say it's probably like the little 8-ounce bottles they got.
Okay.
Maybe 4 ounces or 6 ounces per acre.
So it doesn't take a whole lot.
It doesn't take much at all, no.
To get that down. Okay.
You just got to make sure you mix it, obviously.
Right.
So if you've got a circulation on your pump, just circulate that through there and get everything mixed up good. Or what I usually do is I just fill it up at the truck, and then by the time I ride back to wherever I'm going, it's usually pretty mixed up.
Most of the fields aren't that smooth,
exactly.
Are they?
Not for food plots.
Right.
So most of the time it's already mixed pretty good. But as long as you make sure you got it mixed good, you'll be in good shape. But that's something I wanted to cover, because I do think a lot of people panic about their food plots, and then they either do too much or they don't do enough because they don't know where to start. But make sure you got your weather right, do your mowing, do your spraying, and then let it be till the fall.
It's easy done to panic when you look at, let's say you're running a food plot and you're in agriculture country like we are, and every field around is weedless and it's all rowed really nice, and you can see from one end of the field to the other, and there's not a weed in it. And then you look at your food plot and it's it kind of looks like you didn't mow the backyard for a couple mm-hmm. weeks. It's easy to kind of get.
Especially when you got the money in it that you do
yeah,
to start with.
It's easy to kind of get overzealous and think, man, I got to do something right now. And it's hard not to.
Yep.
When, like you said, you've got the money in this and you're thinking, man, I just spent X amount of dollars and look at this.
Yep. Ultimately, you got to remember the deer don't care what it looks like. As long as the clover's in there, if you can get it cleaned up by the fall, you'll be in good shape. And again, the deer are going to eat the weeds and stuff during the summer.
They are, and you know, I got to say this for our benefit as much as anyone else's. We're not posting it on TV to see how clean it looks and how pretty green it is. Now we do. You do on social media. You post mm-hmm. your plots and stuff. But it takes work to get them that way, and it takes money. And if you don't have the time or all that much money, it still doesn't mean you can't have an effective plot. It just may not look like what you're seeing in the commercials and stuff on TV.
Exactly. And, you know, the one reason I don't want too many weeds also is we're not trying to provide summer food for those deer because those weeds are everywhere and all the crops and everything like that too. But right. if it is in there, it's not that big a deal. Like you said, it doesn't have to look like what you see on TV during the hunting season throughout the whole entire year.
Yeah, obviously, if you're growing weed, you're not growing clover, so there's a trade-off there. But yep. can you live with what you got without spending all kinds of money and doing the wrong things and then being worse off in the fall, maybe?
Yep. And then if you come in, you take care of that like you should, you can always come back in the fall, and you can put down some seed in those spots,
sure.
in those bare spots in the fall.
Which
and
we've done.
Yeah, and you're going to have new growth before the hunting season as well.
We've done that on Jeff's plot last
yep.
year, right?
Yep.
Yeah, and
generally,
it's looking pretty good.
All the clover plots that we'll do, we're going to frost seed them in the wintertime for those bare spots for sure, and even some of them that aren't, because that clover's only going to live so long anyway. It's got a lifespan just like anything else. So make sure you do your soil test, obviously. That's a whole other podcast on complete clover maintenance. But if you do have this problem, if it is kind of overgrown with weeds, go in there and take care of them, take care of your grass like you should, like everything we've talked about, and then you can always go back in the fall and plant. You can broadcast more clover in before rain, and you'll have some new fresh clover. You'll have different stages of growth, which is good for the deer as well. So,
and if you have any questions, this guy can always just shoot you an email or mm-hmm. a message.
Yep, yep, we're always available
on social media for, hey, this is what's going on. Is this exactly what I need to do, kind of thing? And
yep, yep.
We want to see people succeed at everything they're doing.
Yeah, exactly. So if you guys got any questions about that stuff, you can definitely reach out to us. But we're going to take a break here, and then we'll come back with another segment for you guys here at the S3DA 3D National Shoot at Wren Lake. Our partners at Flambeau Outdoors have some of the best solutions in the industry for your decoy and storage needs. They're focused on innovation that matters, and they build their products to last. They're probably most known for their whitetail, waterfowl, and turkey decoys, and that's for good reason. They've got a lot of quality options at great price points in each category. The Boss Buck is a personal favorite of mine in their whitetail line, and I've been throwing their Stormfront mallards in front of duck blinds for years now. Don't sleep on their storage solutions either, though. Whether it's fishing tackle, firearms, ammo, or archery equipment, they've got you covered. They just stepped up their archery storage game, too, with the new Formula Bow Case. It might just be the best bow case on the market, and I'm really excited to use it this season and for years to come. Make the most of your time outdoors with Flambeau. Realism that gets results. All right, we got Coach Ricky. We just met right
yes.
here on with us now. So, first of all, why don't you just introduce yourself to the people?
My name's Ricky Sauls. I'm the head archery coach for Southeastern Illinois College, mm-hmm. located in Harrisburg, Illinois. We've had a collegiate archery team since 2011.
Okay.
We compete. USA Archery is the governing body for college archery.
So are you guys, you say you've been since 2011?
Mm-hmm.
Is that a fairly new program? Are you guys one of the older programs?
We were one of the first
okay.
colleges to get into archery whenever it became a college mm-hmm. sport.
Yeah.
So, you know, we actually hosted some of the first national 3D tournaments.
Nice.
Nice.
Because there just wasn't enough colleges around
right.
doing
sure.
archery. Now, it's grown tremendously since then.
Right, right.
I've been the coach for about 3 years, mm-hmm. but I'm very familiar with the program because my son shot as a guest for SIC when he was in college.
Okay. So that's something that we've talked to Steve about, is just the growth of all of this within the last few years. So since 2011, or since you've taken over 3 years ago, how much have you really seen it take off?
Quite a bit.
Yeah.
You know, especially, you know, I just keep track of the college stuff now. Before, I was very involved with S3DA. Mm-hmm. I was the first Illinois state coordinator for S3DA. Mm-hmm. And then I got out of it when my son got old enough to to go to college.
Right. Sure.
I got out of that. And then the opportunity came up at SIC. I was already working there.
Okay.
But they asked me if I wanted to do that as well, and I said, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm not doing it for the money.
Right.
I'm doing it because I love doing it.
Sure.
You know, I truly enjoy watching these young people. Can't call them kids. even at the college level, because when they come to college, they already know how to shoot a bow.
Oh, right.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But just watching them grow and getting that experience. That's the reason I do it. But yes, it has grown tremendously just in the 3 years that I've been the coach at SIC. Mm-hmm. Just in our region, which we're part of the North Regional, just in our region, there's been, I'm going to guess, probably five or six colleges or universities come on board and start an archery team.
Nice.
You know, and that's just in the North region.
Yeah.
So you figure out how many regions and multiply that. There's a lot of colleges and universities coming on board.
Definitely.
So you said universities. In other college sports, there's a difference between JUCOs,
right,
junior colleges, and universities and four-year colleges. Is archery that way, or
no,
is it just across?
There's no division.
Okay.
We compete against Michigan State, mm-hmm, Texas A&M. University
nice.
Of Cumberland's.
Nice.
They're the number one archery team in the country.
Uh-huh.
Have been for several years, but we compete against them.
Okay.
Now there's talk about trying to make it divided a little bit, just because it has grown so much.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, I've got it 18 kids coming next fall.
Wow.
To SIC to shoot archery. Some of the other schools about our size may only have 8 or 10.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
But when we go to nationals, we compete against teams that's got 60
right
on their team.
Right.
That's hard to
It's hard to compete. Yeah,
you know,
for sure.
Obviously, you know, the good thing about the archery is everybody's competing individually. So if you may not win as a team, but you may have an outstanding shooter that wins it all.
Right.
You
right.
Know,
right.
Coming from a very small school.
Right.
You know, I've got a young lady on my team that. She ended up 14th in the country.
Cool.
At Outdoor Target Nationals.
Right.
You know,
I have to figure that's a pretty good recruiting tool for you, because you're competing against the bigger schools, right?
Yes.
But at the same time, it's not like football or basketball, where you might be like an outstanding player, but if your team sucks, you're not going to win anything.
Right. Right.
So you could be, maybe you're recruiting in your backyard,
mm-hmm,
where in the same situation, let's say a baseball player. SIC's baseball coach might lose out to Michigan State or U of I. For you, though, hey, we're close to home, and we can offer you the same thing that the other schools are offering you if you're a good enough shooter.
Right. And, that's one good thing about SIC being a two-year community college.
Mm-hmm.
We've got stuff that these four-year schools don't have.
Yeah.
We've got diesel technology. We've got welding, nursing, criminal justice, mm-hmm, you know.
Right.
You know, we've got programs that these four-year schools don't have. That's what these young people are wanting.
It's the similar demographic, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. They're, and, you know, so that's where I get a lot of my shooters, because they don't want to sit and go for a four-year degree. They're wanting a two-year degree and go to work.
Right. Yep. Right. Yep.
But they'd like to be able to shoot while they do it.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's you know, you can't really compare – SIC as a whole,
mm-hmm,
to competing against the four-year schools for shooters.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting the ones that want SIC.
Yeah.
That we've got something they want.
Yep.
That know it, that the four-year schools don't have.
Yeah.
You know.
Yep.
And it's a lot cheaper.
Yeah, no doubt.
I mean,
so do you find the other community – are you competing against the other community colleges for these shooters?
Yes.
So it is.
Yeah, that's
the thing you're competing against.
Yeah, I'm competing against
the other community colleges
more so than I am the universities.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Right.
And the good thing for me and the other community college, there's not very many community colleges that have an archery team.
Yeah. At this point, right?
Right. At this point, there's not very many that have, you know, the two-year schools that have an archery
team. Well, this has got to be like a kid in the candy store for you, all these shooters out here as a college coach.
Yeah, the bad thing about it is I don't have enough time to talk to everybody.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask is what's this kind of event like for you? And then how much have you seen this, even the national shoot change over your courses as a coach or being involved with S3DA?
It's grown, I mean, like crazy because I was, like I said, I was in it from the very beginning when it first started, and just to see the growth, it's just amazing how much it's grown,
and an extremely valuable event to you as a coach.
Absolutely. I get it, that gives me an opportunity to see them. I can give them my card and, you know, say, hey, I'd be interested in talking to you. I have no idea what their plans are.
Doesn't
matter. I've opened the door.
Sure.
I leave it up to them. If they contact me, I'll do everything I can to try to get them what they want. I mean, I don't want one of these shooters to come to SIC if we don't have what they want.
Sure,
right.
Because it's not about archery.
Right.
It's about the education.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, that's first.
Sure.
You know, but why not do something they love doing, and to help pay for it and.
Absolutely, have some fun
while they're there.
Absolutely.
So outside of these events, what does recruiting look like for you as an archery coach? Is it mostly this kind of stuff?
Or? Well, that's where I spend. I try to come to events like this, ASA tournaments, indoor tournaments. You know, I try to go to some of those. But, you know, part of it is, you know, just having the information out there, whether it be social media or our website. Because if you'll get on the computer and Google colleges with archery teams, we pop up.
Yeah.
right.
And so even if I haven't talked to one of these kids, if they see, okay, SIC's got an archery team.
They might come to you.
But do they have what I want? Well, now they can. Well, I wanted to do diesel technology. They've got diesel technology.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to reach out to him. You know, and you know, I get several that way. You know, just reaching out to me that I've never heard of.
What I was going to ask you is, in your universities and your bigger sports, you know, Canyon referenced football and basketball. There's not really any sleepers out there.
No,
I was going to ask you if you ever run across a sleeper shooter that's never been to one of these events.
Yes.
That just is really a solid person and a solid shooter, and just. Walks up and there you are. That happens.
Yes.
Okay.
It happens quite often.
Excellent.
Quite often. I've actually got guessing 7 or 8 coming this fall that have never competed in archery, but they've been shooting a bow for years.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right.
They didn't even know competition archery existed.
Yeah.
But they can shoot a bow.
Yeah.
And I tell all of them, I don't have time in the 2 years that you're going to be with me to teach you how to shoot a bow and compete. Mm-hmm. But if you've already done one of them, I can teach you the other one.
Right.
Even if they've never, not never shot a bow, but haven't shot a bow very much, but they were on a shotgun team. Well, they know what competition's about, you know. So I don't have to teach them the competition side of things. Mm-hmm. I just got to fine tune their shooting.
Right.
If they've been shooting for years and can shoot real good, I don't have to teach them how to shoot. We're going to tweak it, and I'm going to make them a better shooter.
Right.
But, you know, I don't have to.
Exactly.
I don't have to show them which way the arrow goes.
Exactly.
You know, the pointy end goes away from it. You know, I don't have to teach them that. They already know that.
Yeah.
So
right.
Then I just have to teach them the competition side.
Yeah.
And so, you know, but yeah, I've got several coming this year that are like that.
Wow, nice.
And I've got some that used to shoot competition archery and got real involved in stuff in high school and got away from it, and they're not on anybody's radar, but I remember them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I reach out to them, hey, you know, are you interested?
That's another door I was going to open, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
I was like, at what point do you start thinking, I want to talk to that young man in a couple of years? At what point do you see that in someone?
Young adults are going out on the range at 1 o'clock, and from 1 o'clock until they get done, I'll be out there walking up and down the ranges, watching them. There's some that I'm wanting to make sure I see.
Right.
But then there's others I'm going to look at everybody.
Sure.
And, you know, I don't talk to any of them while they're out there shooting.
Right, right.
I usually try to find their parent.
Right.
And if I don't do anything but say, hey, give them a card and say, get a hold of me. Or I may sit there and talk to them for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, see what their intentions are, see what they're playing, you know, if they have any intentions. Some of them have already made a decision and don't plan on shooting after high school, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. You know, but some of them are looking for the next step.
Yeah. So what's the scholarship situation look like for you as a two-year school with archery? Obviously, there's a lot more scholarship opportunities now than there were in 2011. But how does that look, and are there different levels to it? There's a four-year school, I guess obviously they would have more scholarships to give than a two-year, or is
not
it the same across the board?
Not necessarily. It's different with every school.
Okay.
It's different with every school. You know, I can't speak for a four-year school.
Right. Yeah, sure.
But as far as SIC, we're very, very well established. We've got plenty of scholarships, good scholarships, and we've got some that'll pay for everything, and then we've got some that'll pay for half.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And usually the way I try to work it is the first year students, they get those smaller ones. If they stick, and our scholarships are from year to year, because some of our programs are just a year long certificate programs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, and right. I don't want to tie up a scholarship for somebody that's only going to be there for a year.
Right.
So,
right.
But if they come back the second year, that's when they get the better scholarship. Mm-hmm. You know, yep. not always the case. Part of it just depends on how good a shooter they are, how bad they need the scholarship.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. But. But, you know, as far as the four-year schools, I can't really – I'm not sure.
Yeah, yeah. So, you as a college coach, what does it look like kind of – like you mentioned fine-tuning. Is that most of what you're doing at the collegiate level?
For the most part, yes. Because for the most part, they've – especially kids coming from an event like this, they've been shooting for several years. They've already had a coach for several years, you know. Some of the coaches are better than others, you know, but I don't know that.
Right.
So, you know, and just watching them shoot one or two arrows out here, it's hard to tell how good they are. But I don't look at it as how good they are, what their score is. I don't, that's not that big a deal to me.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of person they are and what kind of student they're going to be.
Yeah.
Because that's the object of it.
And anybody can have a good round or a bad round,
exactly,
right?
Exactly.
On any given day.
And, you know, I keep in mind also that I do vaguely still remember high school. But, you know, in high school, they've got all kinds of other stuff going on.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. You know.
Yep.
And I keep that in mind.
Yeah.
Now, when I get them to SIC, all that stuff's gone. Now, the most they're going to have is maybe a boyfriend or a girlfriend. Might have to work, you know, have a part-time job, their schoolwork, and archery.
Yeah.
You know, where they don't have cheerleading and student government. And,
exactly.
You know, everything else they've been involved in, that now they can concentrate on archery. So, you know, as long as they want to concentrate on archery, that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Somebody that's passionate about it and wants to keep shooting.
That makes sense. So what separates one junior college from another? Like you said, there's not a bunch of them around, but you guys are kind of competing for shooters. So, like, what is something that a shooter might find attractive about one school versus the other? Is it programs and stuff like that?
Yes.
Is there more to it than that?
That's the main thing, is the programmed, because especially in Southern Illinois, there's three community colleges in Southern Illinois that's got an archery team. We've got some of the same programs, but for the most part, each one of us has got programs the others don't have.
Yeah.
Which is good.
Which is good, yes.
Yeah.
Very good. So, you know, that is a big determining factor on who gets them.
Yeah.
The other is, you know, who's talked to them.
Right.
You know, like I said, I'm going to be out there on the range.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I may talk to some the other coaches didn't get a chance to talk to.
Right.
Right.
Well, who are they going to give the opportunity to.
You're at least going to get a look.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and that's
100%.
all I ask for.
Yeah.
When I,
right.
You know.
Right.
Give me a chance.
Right.
If you don't like it, I don't want you.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right. Right.
Because
right.
I want you to succeed.
Sure. Yeah.
You know that's the main thing is success and sure. being a successful person.
Yeah. And I got to figure that's like anything else is it could even be if a shooter hits it off with a coach, maybe more so than
yes,
another one, right?
Absolutely.
Like you might click with somebody. Somebody else may not be the right fit.
Right, and that I've seen that happen to my advantage and against me as well.
Yeah.
You know, and part of it is who else is on the team. They may
yeah.
they may click with them real good.
Yeah.
They may have shot with them for years in S3DA. So
right,
that's
right.
they'd feel more comfortable going there and being on part of that team than they would be coming to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they don't know anybody on my team.
Right, right.
Yeah,
right.
Obviously, the more I have on my team, the better my chances.
Yeah,
but,
right. Right.
but yeah, that's that,
so.
That's
are there maximum numbers, or are you just pretty much scholarship bound, or
I?
Do you have walk ons?
Yes, I do, and I have had. It's one in particular, I've had as a walk on. I still had a scholarship available, but he already had a full ride scholarship
okay.
academically.
Okay.
So he said, but I'd still like to shoot on the archery team. I said, absolutely.
He's
come
an on. Academic scholarship. He's smart
yeah.
enough to shoot, isn't
well,
he?
Well, I mean, but he still wanted to be a part of the team.
Right,
yeah.
right.
So, you know, I didn't have to use a scholarship on him,
yeah.
and I was able to pick up another shooter.
Yeah.
You know, but numbers-wise, you have 18.
I've got 18.
You can have
as many as you want.
As many as you
as many
want.
As your administration will allow
well,
you.
Yeah. Right.
And as I've got a budget.
Sure. Well, yep, right.
As long as I stay in my budget, they don't care.
They don't care.
You know, I'm going. This is a little bit of an exaggeration, but they don't care if I spend my entire budget on 10 or 30.
Yeah.
They give me a budget. Say there you go.
Yeah, Ricky lives in the budget. Right.
Make it work.
Yeah.
Make it
yep.
work. And
yeah.
I, you know, I have.
Yeah.
You know, the ideal number for college archery is 24. So
because
there's 8 different classes.
Okay.
And to compete as a team, you have to have at least 3 in each class. So 3 times 8 is 24.
Yep.
So when you have 18, you're just not competing in a class or
I'm not,
two.
I'm not able to compete in every class.
In every
yes.
class.
Yeah.
And the classes are
the for college archery, it's compound, which is your open class.
Right.
Fixed pins, which is your
right.
bow hunter class.
Right.
Olympic recurve and bare bow. And they have those 4 for men and those 4 for women.
Okay.
So that makes up the 8 classes.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Yeah. But the odds of me ever getting 24 and 3 in each class
and 3
are
in
pretty
the right
slim.
Classes. Yeah, yeah. Right.
Because
right.
I don't care what they shoot.
Right.
You know.
Okay.
If I need one more for male bare bow to make a team, I'm not going to say, okay, I'll take you on my team, but the only way you can come is if you switch to bare bow.
Yeah.
Right. You know.
Right.
Because they're not going to be comfortable doing it, and they're not going to be as good.
Right. Yep.
You know,
right.
they're not going to want to do it every day.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't care what they shoot. I think my men's fixed pins for this fall, I think I got 7. You know. Increases our odds of
yeah.
doing good in that class.
Sure.
But that knocks us out of being able to compete in some other classes.
So,
sure. but
just as a – if you have 2 that are, let's just say, bare bow,
mm-hmm.
and I can still compete if I shoot bare bow, I just can't compete as a team?
Right. Right, yes. So everybody competes individually.
Okay, right.
And
yeah.
then from those scores, me as the coach can pick my bare bow team. So or my fixed pins, I've got 7.
Right.
Now, I can pick out of how they shot today on who I want to represent us as a team, the 3, for the team competition.
But if I like Harrisburg, or I'm sorry, SIC and Coach Ricky – But I shoot a recurve, I can still come and compete.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
All right. Yeah.
Yes.
I want to make sure that we all knew that,
yes.
you know, I don't have to have 2 other people to come
no.
with me to shoot
no.
whatever class
no.
I want
no.
to shoot
at. Individually is what you look for, and it's what I look for,
mm-hmm.
and I hope I can end up making a team.
Yeah.
But the team part is not
okay.
as important as the other.
Okay.
So I'll we'll let you get out of here and go do your thing for the day. Uh-huh. But before we do, if someone's out there listening and they're interested in maybe becoming a shooter, or they're interested in talking to you, maybe they like what you've said, interested in talking to you about your program, where can they find you? Where can they get more information about SIC's program?
They can go to sic.edu. The information's on there. You might have to look for it a little bit. Or you can shoot me an email at Ricky, R-I-C-K-Y, dot Sauls, S-A-U-L-S, at sic.edu.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. Appreciate your time, man.
Absolutely.
And enjoy the rest of the day.
Yes.
You got work to do,
right?
Something you like.
Yes.
Yep.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Yep. Thanks, sir. If you guys are looking for your own piece of ground to manage and hunt, Rodney Hawkins is a guy you need to talk to. He grew up hunting and fishing in Southern Illinois, and he's now putting that love for the outdoors into selling recreational properties as a land specialist with Midwest Farm and Land. Midwest Farm and Land isn't your average real estate company. They do residential properties, but they also do a ton of recreational property sales as well. Rodney himself sold over $7 million worth of properties last year alone. They've got agents like him all over Illinois, so they're really a local company with a national reach. For more info on them, what might be available, or even getting your property listed if you're looking to get rid of one and maybe get into something else, you can contact Rodney directly at 618-925-3153, and he'll get you taken care of. He's also got his own company called RG Outdoors that currently has products from Radix Hunting, Tacticam Trail Cameras, Camo Dust, and he's adding new stuff all the time. So if you're interested in any of that, go over to their Facebook page, RG Outdoors. Email them at rgoutdoors@yahoo.com. Or again, just call Rodney directly at 618-925-3153. So that was Ricky Sauls from Southeastern Illinois College. He's the coach there. He gave you guys his information. If maybe you're interested in shooting archery at the collegiate level, you don't have a team, or if you're in the area and you're curious what you need to do to get to that level, I'm sure he'd be more than happy to answer any questions you have, so you could reach out to him. But we've also got Benji Bernard coming on later. He is the Shooter of the Year for his division in Illinois this past season, and he finished second at the indoor state, so we're excited to talk to him a little bit. It'll be a pretty cool interview, I think, so make sure you stay tuned for that. Before we get into that, though, I wanted to get into and see what you thought, because I was talking about this the other day. I forget it was, maybe I was talking to Jeff or Nate, but...
Yeah, tomato, tomato.
Yeah, same thing. We were talking about the late planting season that we got right now, because we've kind of had, it's been a pretty wet spring, but it's also been spread out where it hasn't really dried up. Like, we'd get a rain and start to dry up, and then we'd get another rain.
Yeah, tell me about it, trying to work the garden.
Yeah, so it's pushing everybody back on getting things planted, which means it's going to push the harvest back. Now, some of us hunt places where harvest is usually November anyway, but I'd say there's going to be a lot more of that this year. It's going to be a late harvest just based on the late planting season in a lot of places. And obviously this isn't going to affect everybody throughout the Whitetail Range, because there's not as much ag in places. But in the Midwest, mostly, you're seeing the same weather as we did in a lot of places, I think. So what I think is going to happen is it's going to be kind of tough. We've all had those setups where if you got standing corn all around you, or in a big field of standing corn, you're just not seeing as many deer. Even though they're still there, they've got, let's say, 200 acres of, to them, really good cover. And especially if there's waterways in it where they don't necessarily have to come out early to get a drink or something. If there's a creek close by, I think it could make life a lot more difficult, especially early season and even in up into the beginning of the rut, if you've got standing crops around. And part of that is just not being able to see them if it's corn. Obviously, if it's beans, it's going to go through the stage where when they start to turn yellow, they're still going to go seek out another green food source. So if you have a green food source like the clover plots we talked about earlier, that could be a good place. But those beans are going to be there for a long time.
Them deer will be in there, too.
Throughout the season.
Than you think they are in a bean field.
Yeah. But I do think if you have beans, you're going to be in a better situation than corn, because if they're out late, which a lot of guys are going to want to get those out before it frosts, so... That's also why I think the corn's going to be out even longer, because the later they got to wait to plant their beans, that's going to push their corn back, and then they're going to want to harvest the beans before they have any bad freeze, because they don't want to lose anything to the – they don't want the bean pods to shatter and all that stuff. So they're going to cut their beans first, I would assume. I'm not a farmer, so I don't know this exactly. But this is my reason, my logical thinking on this. And then that would push the corn harvest back even farther. So you're still going to have that troubles with that. But if the beans are a little bit later than normal – if they dry out at the right time of year where everything else is starting to die and those deer are back on the beans, if you got standing beans, you might be in really good shape.
Yeah, you might. The corn being out is kind of like a double-edged sword for guys like me.
Mm-hmm.
So, as you know, most people have heard me over here before, I have to hunt early because of the business I'm in. And the thing about the corn being out there is, like you said, there's, let's just say 200 acres, for instance. That's 200 acres that they're going to hide in, live in, eat in, mm-hmm. whatever, that I can't see. One of the good parts of that is the movements aren't going to change. So if you do early scouting in September, for instance, August, September, every time they cut 40, 60, 80-acre field, that has an opportunity to change. Well, if the crops are still there, it's not going to change. So your early scouting is going to be maybe last a little longer than normal.
Might be more valuable than
might
normal
be more
seasons.
Valuable. As the season begins, but that might be about the only good part of that.
Yeah, if you can figure out, like you said, there before the season, and you don't want to be too intrusive there right before the season, but you can get away with a little bit more. So if you can get in there and figure out maybe where they're entering a cornfield at or where they're coming out of it from cover, maybe they're not bedding in that corn, but they're bedding in a different spot, or if you can find out which edge they're preferring to use to get to water, or if it's, let's say, it's between a creek and a cornfield, something like that, then, yeah, that could be a really good opportunity to kill one. That's maybe another benefit.
I'm just thinking more like, you know, even like cameras. If you've got cameras out there and you're getting the picture of your whatever you're after, or maybe just you're after, whatever, if those patterns don't change because the crops haven't been cut, I don't know where most places I hunt, if they cut the crops, patterns change a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Most of the time they will. Quite a bit.
So that might be the only good part about the late crops for guys like me is probably not going to change any patterns throughout the time that I'm allowed to hunt.
Mm-hmm. Especially if they're not staying in the corn and they're just going out to eat at night and they're going to stand somewhere else. Because if they're staying in it, it's going to be maybe more difficult to pattern them just because they're going to be able to walk through that and feel safe wherever. As opposed to when that corn is out, they're not going to walk, generally not going to walk across the open field for no reason. Where if the corn's standing, they can walk through it anywhere. But I do think, like you said, it could have some benefit, but I think it's also going to be difficult. Unless, again, another scenario is if you're just strictly hunting permission property, which another double-edged sword. If you're hunting permission property and you've asked and they're okay with you like broadcasting into their standing crop.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got corn, really, or if you have beans, it's going to take longer for them to get that out and expose what you've planted to hunt over. But at the same time, it's still going to be there. But if you can't do that, let's say it's just strictly permission to hunt, you can absolutely do nothing else with the property. It might give you an advantage because there is a food source still there. So whereas, like the North Farm, for example, last year I broadcast the stuff into it. Part of it did okay, part of it didn't, just because it was so dry. So once they got the crops out, and this happens a lot on bean years, once they cut the beans, there was no real reason for the deer to be there. They would move through on the edges occasionally, but consistently there was no reason for the deer to be on that farm because they're not necessarily bedding on it a good portion of the time. They're not moving through it a ton. They will limited amount. But if I still had those beans out there, let's say later into October, then I still have a reason for those deer to be there. If nothing else, for the does to be there in late October and then the bucks to come check the does. Same way with the corn. Usually on a corn year there, if they shell the corn, there's enough left over, which it's corn this year, that there will still be some reason for the deer to be there. Now that's just going to happen even later, so maybe there's more reason for the deer to be there even later in the year. So if you're just strictly permission property guy, it might be an okay thing, depending on especially when they cut the corn. Let's say they come in and cut the corn in November, and then now you have whatever's left in that field, which is not going to be a ton, but whatever it is, more than you would have had there not been anything there, and they're not going to have it picked clean already like they maybe would have on a different year. Now you've got a food source for them there late into November, early part of December, whereas maybe you wouldn't before. So I can see it going both ways depending on what your situation is. If you're a private property guy and you're planting food plots, I definitely think it can have an effect on how much the deer are going to use your food plots. Because if there's beans around, the deer are going to eat the beans.
Yep.
especially destination feeding in the evenings, coming back from in the mornings. They're going to go hit those beans in the evening. I mean, that's they know it's there. They know they like it, and it has a high nutrition value. The one thing about corn is they know it's there and they know they like it. It's great for carbs in the wintertime to help keep them warm and keep them fed, but it's not incredibly nutritious. So I think maybe they even prefer beans over corn for that reason. What I don't think they know that, but maybe it tastes better to them. You know what I mean? Like, right. It's not like, oh, I'm going to eat healthy today. I'll go to the bean field. But if you've got beans around and you're trying to draw them in maybe off your neighbor's property where that ag crop is, it with your food plot, it's going to be a lot tougher if those beans are out there for another 2 weeks or 2 weeks to a month, you know, whereas on a normal year, maybe you've got the only food around, the best food around when that crop is out. So it could present some challenges in my mind. I think it'll be interesting to see really what happens this year and how late it has been pushed back, because we're getting into June, and I was out doing some spraying on some clover plots yesterday, and guys are just now running hard getting stuff in the ground. So
yeah, yep.
It's not definitely a different year.
Well, there's this guy I know just tilled up a bunch of corn
mm-hmm.
that he had in the ground
yeah.
for 10 days or so and just got rid of it and replanted. So
and you'll have some guys who will spend the extra money and plant like short season stuff, so it'll still come up and be harvested about the same time. But if they're still planting the regular longer season stuff, it's definitely going to have an effect. I think it'll be interesting to see. But we're going to take another break, and then when we come back, we're going to talk to Benji Bernard here at the S3DA National 3D Shoot. So stay tuned for that. If you guys plant food plots and you don't know who Grandpa Ray Outdoors is, you need to look him up. They specialize in providing the best nutrition for white-tailed deer on your property, starting with the soil. They've got a full line of high-quality food plot seed and plant foods with over 14 different food plot blends to choose from. You won't have any trouble finding what you're looking for. They've got fall and spring blends, corn and beans, switchgrass, liquid fertilizer, soil test kits, you name it. When it comes to planting, they've got it. They're not just about selling their products, though. They were started in 2015. John, the owner, has been in the business since 1991. So with that knowledge that he's acquired, he's going to be able to answer any questions you have about what blends would be best for your specific property. That way you can achieve the best results possible. Like us, John and his team don't believe in a cookie-cutter approach to wildlife nutrition. They're going to treat you and your situation individually. We've used tons of their seed on client properties, on our own properties, and the results have always been as good, if not better, than advertised. That's why we partnered with them in the first place. If you want to, go to GrandpaRayOutdoors.com, use the discount code RHOPODCAST, that's all lowercase, no space, and you get 5% off your entire order there. You guys need to go check them out if you care about getting the most bang for your buck when it comes to your food plots. All right, so we got Benji Bernard on here now. He is the state shooter of the year for the Eagle Pens Outdoor 3D, and you play second in state this year for the indoor, right?
Yep.
At the indoor meet. So tell us a little bit about how you guys started in archery and all that. I know obviously your dad is a big part of it.
Yeah.
But what got you started in it, and then we'll kind of roll into today and the state shoot and all that stuff.
Yeah, when I first started, I started shooting my bow and got really good at it. And dad offered that I could shoot for the school, and I started doing that and really enjoyed it. So that's what I started doing.
Yeah. So you guys have a school program there at?
It's not really a school thing. It's an organized thing.
Okay. But it's somewhat sponsored by the school, or is it not sponsored by the school at all? It's completely separate. You guys yep. are just Hamilton County Archery.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. And then you compete individually, but as part of the team, right?
Yep.
Okay. So how's your guys' team generally do in the meets and stuff? You guys do pretty good?
Yeah, we do pretty good. It's just a really small team.
Right.
Though.
Yeah. Cool.
How many team members you got, Benji?
Nine, 10, 11.
9 or 10, okay.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Cool. So let's go back to the, like you said, you're the state shooter of the year. So how do you get that? Like, how do you become the state shooter of the year? What do you have to do that?
Well, you really practice a lot and got to keep your head up if you make a bad shot and mm-hmm. just keep going.
Yeah. So what, do you have to win certain events? Do you have to get so many points?
To
become the shooter of the year?
To
yeah.
get shooter of the year, it's your top 3 regional scores from regional shoots,
uh-huh.
and then you have your state score, and you add it all up, and that's your score in total for Shooter of the Year. Mm-hmm. And it's just that and against everyone else.
Yeah.
So you have to shoot at least three regionals then
yep.
to qualify, and for then state. You shoot at the state, and then that score adds with your three regionals, your
yep.
top three regionals, so you could shoot more regionals if you wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. So I should have asked first, how old are you?
I am 11.
11 years old. About to turn 12. All right, how long have you been shooting?
3 years.
So this is your third year shooting? 12 years
yeah.
old? Well, you're going to be 12 coming up?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So are you – do you feel like you're improving a bunch year after year? Are you getting more comfortable with it? Like, what's some stuff that
– Yeah, I'm feeling a lot more comfortable at it ever since I started getting better. And
mm-hmm.
I had a big switch – between releases, and that helped a lot too.
Yeah. So what switch did you make with your releases?
I switched from an appendix finger trigger to a Carter's back tension.
Yeah? You like it a lot better?
Yeah. It's a lot better.
How long did it take to get used to that?
I'd say 2-3 months.
Yeah. I right. figured. But you like it a lot better now?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? You're shooting just better with it and everything?
Yeah.
Cool.
So what's your favorite part of the shoots besides, obviously, a great big tropical snow cone?
That's melting over there as
yeah.
we speak. Your dad's going to have to eat it for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I can see that coming. So what's your favorite part of, like, a shoot like today?
Well, I like shooting, getting out there and being with my friends and meeting new people and everything.
Oh, cool, yeah. cool. So you meet new people just about every shoot then?
Yeah.
All right.
Cool. So do you still get nervous?
Sometimes.
Sometimes? Well, do you get more nervous at these or, like, at the state shoot indoors, or does it –
I'd say probably in nationals because there's a lot more people.
There's a lot more people. Yeah, there are a lot of people here today, aren't there?
Yeah.
Is your group any bigger, or you still shoot with the same size of group?
I still shoot with the same size of – well, I had 3 people today.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's you and 3 other people?
Yeah.
Okay.
And 2 other people.
And 2
so
other
So you were one of the 3?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, all right.
People. How long did it take you to shoot the course today?
About an hour or two.
Oh, man.
So maybe closer to 3, 3 and a half. Well, it didn't seem like that long then, did it?
No, it didn't.
Yeah, that's good,
time
I guess.
Time flies when you're having fun.
There you go.
So did you like the course? It was a pretty good
yeah,
course.
Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah.
Bunch of.
What's your favorite target?
Well, today I'd probably say either the coyote or I usually don't like the wolverine, but today I liked it pretty much.
Okay, why don't you normally like it?
Because they usually put it a lot farther range, and it's
yeah.
a really small target. So.
Oh, okay. Was there anything on the range that you weren't expecting? Are they all pretty similar? Or?
I'd say the thing I wasn't expecting is we had to shoot out of a ditch uphill.
Yeah.
And I was not expecting that at all.
Yeah.
But
did
still
you do okay
good.
On?
Yeah.
There you go. So what did you end up doing today? How old did you shoot?
I started
Don't
with...
Don't lie. Your dad's right here.
I started with 7 down at the beginning, and then I worked my way all the way up to 3 up.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Cool. So, obviously, this is a little bit down the road, but you... planning on sticking with this through high school?
Yeah, I'd say.
Yeah? You want to shoot in college one of these days, hopefully?
Hopefully, yeah.
Yeah. Help dad out with some school money?
Oh, dad don't
yeah.
need no help.
Yeah.
So what? You're in the Eagle class, is
yep.
that right? So what? Are you at the top of that now? So next year you're going to stay in the Eagle or you have to move
so
up?
So next year, since I'm turning 12, I am at the maximum for Eagle, so I will be going to young adult or, mm-hmm. yeah,
Youth. All right.
And I'll be shooting, my max will be 30 yards instead of 20. Mm-hmm. And indoor, I will be shooting 20 instead of 10 yards.
Oh, so you're not the big duck in the puddle anymore. You're going to be a little feller again,
yeah.
right? Oh, that's all right.
Kind of like starting from the bottom and working your way up.
You
again.
Can compete with them, that's right.
Yeah.
Yep. So youth is then from, dad, do you know, from 12 to 14, 15? Okay.
So are you practicing it? 20 yards already just to get used to it?
Yeah, I usually just practice it for outdoor, but mm-hmm. when I go to indoor, I usually just stick with 10. That's all
yeah.
I'm worrying about.
Yeah, so that's your practice routine then. You're practicing for what your meet is going to be. Like if you're
yeah.
shooting 10 yards, you're practicing at 10 yards.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. Keep it simple that way,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. Or I shoot with what my pins are. So my pins are 10, 15, 20, so I'll shoot a couple rounds at 10, a couple rounds at 15, and a couple rounds at 20.
Yeah.
And some in between.
Yeah. So tell us about your setup over there, your bow and everything.
So
what kind of bow
I
you shoot?
I have an Elite Ember.
All right. Elite sponsor this guy. He's going to be a state champion one of these days, national champion. So
I hope. It's an Elite Ember. I'm shooting Black Eagle PS23s.
Okay.
And it's a really nice setup. I've had it for the 3 years that I've been shooting, and it's been a really good bow. I've only changed strings once.
Yeah.
About to be twice, but.
Yeah, right.
Uh-huh. So you hunt with that setup? Do you bow hunt?
I don't bow hunt yet because my tips are machined in.
Yeah.
I can't screw in broadheads.
Right.
So.
Okay, so with this, like the 3D shooting and stuff, would you use the similar setup to what you're going to use to hunt?
Probably use the same one, just different arrows.
I got you. So what kind of arrows do you like for this? Obviously, you said the ones you're shooting.
I like lighter, thicker arrows.
You like thicker arrows?
Yeah, because...
So you can cut the line. Yeah.
Line cutters, we used to call them.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah. That makes sense. And then you're shooting the back tension release.
Yep.
Yeah, cool.
Carter's Evolution.
Yeah. So we're going to get you sponsored by Elite and Carter's. And did you say Black Eagle Arrows?
Yep.
We need to work on that, Dad. Oh, shoot. Well, it's good having you on, man. I appreciate you stopping by and talking to us.
You're welcome.
And nice job on the shoot today.
Thank you.
And congrats on the state title.
Yeah, you're going again tomorrow, right?
Yep.
So good luck tomorrow with all that. Now, you're shooting a different course.
Yeah.
Do you shoot with the same two people tomorrow, or is it a different draw? So you're shooting with the same two fellas both days?
Yep.
Okay. I guess they're both young men.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Same age.
Yep. Yeah. Cool. Well, good luck, man.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Yeah. All right, so that was Benji. It was a cool interview with him, I thought. It's always fun to get their perspective on things, like the shooters, especially at his age, because he's like the wide-eyed,
100%.
You know, all about this kind of stuff, and it's really cool to see that. We talk about that a lot when we come to these events, so hopefully you guys enjoyed that as much as we did, getting to talk to him, and they're friends of ours too, so that's cool as well, getting to see him at these events, and see him doing well. We enjoy seeing him have success at this. Obviously, he really enjoys it, and his sister Bristol's getting into it too, so it'll be fun to... for her to hopefully see the same success that he's seeing already, and then him continue that. But we got Madison Cox on 2 coming up next after this next segment. She is a pro shooter now. She works for the S3DA as well, where she started shooting. She started her shooting career with S3DA, and now, like I said, she's a pro shooter sponsored by Elite, Black Eagle, and a few other companies. So that's going to be a good interview, too, I think, so stay tuned for that. But before we get into it, I did want to talk about some fall food plot preparation. I usually try to do a full draw Friday on this about this time of year because it's getting to that point where you're going to have to start thinking about where you're going to put your fall plots and what you need to do. If you've got plots that have been there before, they're established, and you're doing them again for this upcoming year, then you might not have to start quite yet unless you're talking about spraying. Maybe you didn't spray early in the spring, so you want to go in there and spray now. That's something that we like to do. We're doing it there at Jeff's, and anywhere I'm going to do a fall plot this year, I have clover, which I've talked about on previous episodes. But if I don't have clover like in years past, I like to try to keep the weeds out of it as much as possible throughout the year.
Right.
Just because it's easier. Once you hit that planting window in August, I usually try to wait till the last rain I think I'm going to get the latest in that planting season, because not only do I have those weeds all dead, then when I come in and plant, if I have to work the ground, anything I'm bringing back up, it's going to get too cold for it to grow. Like the warm season weeds I don't have to deal with. Maybe a little bit of grass in there, but that stuff's going to die soon anyway. But back this whole thing up, that's kind of the reason I like to get on top of that soon. And it really matters if you have a new location for a fall plot, because I really like to try to start that even earlier than now. But if you haven't, now's a good time to get on it. Whether you're talking about clearing trees or maybe you're mowing a new spot, maybe it's not grown up enough where you can't get a bush hog in there after it. But if you're going to do that, you're going to want to start on it now, because if you try to do that in August... You mow it, you spray it, you disc it, then you're going to have stuff that is coming back up that's going to be a mess, and then you're going to have to do all that again until you get to that point where now you have to plant late by default and just hope that stuff doesn't come back up like what I'm talking about doing. Because like we talked about with the clover thing, if you're starting a new fall plot and it's currently grown up in grass and weeds and maybe there's some little trees in it and stuff like that, there are millions upon millions of seeds just sitting there, not only on the plants that have gone to seed, but also under the soil and dormant. So as soon as you do anything to that, whether it's mowing it, whether it's spraying it, and when you break open the soil especially, you're bringing a whole bunch of new growth up, and you're going to have to deal with that.
Yep.
And it's much easier to deal with that now than it is later.
Yes, you can deal with it all along, even if you have to deal with it a couple different times. Or maybe even three, at least you have time now. Whereas, like you said, if you wait another 8 weeks, time runs short. And you're going to have to deal with a lot more grass than you want to, probably.
Exactly. So if you are doing that new, I like to do it similar to the clover stuff. If you've got to mow it, mow it. Let it rain. Give that stuff that you just broadcast a chance to come up, and then spray it. Because that's the thing, too. If you start now, you don't have to be in a hurry. So you don't have to go in there and mow it. Okay, crap, now I got to spray it. Now I got new stuff coming up. I need to spray it again. Mow it down to a manageable height. Let that give that stuff plenty of time to start growing. And then go in with some 2,4-D glyphosate mixed together, or whatever the best stuff you can get your hands on is.
Right.
And then just go wipe it out. As long as there's no residual, or you're spraying it early enough that your residual is not going to affect what you're planting, go in there and just burn that stuff down. And then from that point, I like to just leave it. Or if I'm not going to have to work it, let's say I'm doing buckwheat or something, I'll go broadcast that stuff and then let it come up, and then I don't have to work the soil. So I'll just leave it in that instance. Or if I've got a fall mix that's a throw-and-grow type of stuff, I can spray it, burn that stuff down now. All that litter is mostly going to be gone by the fall. That's another thing. If you wait too long and you burn that stuff down, you're not going to have good seed-to-soil contact because it's still going to be laying there.
Yeah, yeah, you're literally going to have to burn it down.
Exactly. You'll have to get fire out there and burn it.
Right.
So if I'm not going to work the soil, I like to do that early and then just leave it until I'm ready to plant. And then if I need to spray one more time, let's say some new stuff did come up because it's got sunlight or whatever, I'll do that a couple weeks out, maybe, or a month out even, before I'm going to plant. But if I am going to work the soil, I will go ahead and do that. So I'll mow it, give it plenty of time, spray it, and then disc it, till it, whatever you're doing, let all that new stuff come up again, and then you can either spray it again and disc it, or if you get on it quick enough, you can just go in and disc it or till it again, and it's going to kill all that stuff. But that's why you got to start now, because that's a process.
Yep.
You have to. There's time in between that. You can't just do it. Okay, this day I'm going to mow. The next day I'm going to spray. The next day I'm going to disc, and it's going to come up the next day. We're talking like an 8-week process, on average, like you said. So that's something why you got to start it now. That way you can manage that stuff. Especially I'd say if you're going to work the soil. Because there's so many seeds that you're broadcasting when you're mowing, but also underneath there. And if it's a new spot that's never been touched before, there's stuff that's been laying there for years just waiting to get stirred up, waiting to get planted, waiting for sunlight, something, and then you could have a real mess, especially like when we went down south, when we were doing work down there, and you get in some Johnson grass, that stuff is unbelievably difficult to control after you broadcast that seed. If you don't get on it, I mean, when it starts coming up, you don't get on it and spray it.
Yeah.
And then, again, maybe even another rain and spray it again. That stuff can get out of hand on you fast. And there's stuff like that around here, too. And mostly what you're going to be battling is the grass, because once you get rid of those weeds, you might have some new stuff come up. But if you stay on it, like we said, you might still have some grass come up later in the year if you're doing everything right. But you can take care of that. And then your brassicas are going to grow faster than the grass on average. So eventually they're going to shade them out, and they're going to outlast them too. That grass is going to die at some point when it freezes and all that stuff. So we talked a little bit in that segment before Benji there about your food plots, your fall food plots, maybe not being as effective this year, but I still really like the idea of having it out there. Even if it doesn't benefit you a whole bunch for a big window during the season, maybe you still catch the tail end of that late season. If you're still got a tag in your pocket come January, if you have a good fall food source for them that's out there in the wintertime, that's where they're going to be.
Yeah, might be the only one around.
Yep. And then even beyond that, even if you don't get to fill your tag on it, if you can give them a quality food source in February, beginning and late, even middle part of March, then you're benefiting your deer herd greatly. You're going to see, we talk about a lot of things, how you can promote antler growth, obviously outside of advancing them to the next age class. If you can give them good nutrition that part of the year, you're going to see, after a few years, results from that. Your deer are going to have bigger antlers.
Less stress.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's going to end that segment. We've got Madison coming up next, so make sure you stay tuned for that. We'll talk to her about S3DA. We'll talk to her about some pro shooting stuff and competition shooting and all kinds of different stuff. So stay tuned for that. We'll talk to her after this break. The off-season is upon us, and we all know that the path to success next season starts now. To consistently harvest mature bucks, you need to make the most of the upcoming months. And to do that, you need a solid plan. That's where we can help. If you guys want to improve your property to reach its full potential for wildlife, reach out to us about a consultation. We'll spend time getting to know your property and your goals for your deer herd and use that knowledge to develop a wildlife management plan that will help make the most out of the ground that you have. You can contact us through our website or social media to get started today. All right, we're here with Madison now. She's going to tell you a little bit about herself to start with. Just tell the people who you are and who you're here with.
My name is Madison Cox, and I'm here with Scholastic 3D Archery, S3DA, and I'm their membership and service membership services person. I deal with all the Sport 80 and their memberships.
Okay.
Yeah, so what everybody hates, I deal with.
Right.
Somebody
right.
has to.
Yeah. Yep.
So Steve was bragging on you. He said you started out in S3DA.
I did.
And, like, now you shoot professionally.
Yes.
Which we will get into, but I want to go all the way back. Not that long ago, obviously, but when you started in S3DA, what level did you start at? And then kind of walk us through, like, all the levels of it as you go up. You don't have to get real detailed, but.
Okay. So, in high school, I was a cheerleader, and my brother shot archery before me. So, like, the whole time my brother shot, like, I went to the tournaments, and I was like, this is so boring. This is like watching paint dry. And my dad was like, if I got you a bow, would you shoot? And for the longest time, I told him no. I was like, I don't want to do that. It's boring. Like, I'll cheer. Mm-hmm. And then he finally bought me a bow. I think we set it up, like, on a Saturday or Sunday, and then we shot a tournament that next weekend. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of, I say I was just, like, thrown under the bus.
Baptized,
like,
by fire. Yeah.
Yes. It was not very good. I'm pretty sure we were looking for arrows after that tournament. But I shot my first 12 that day during a tournament, and I thought it was super cool. But so that first tournament was with S3DA. S3DA was originally started in Kentucky. Like, that's mm-hmm. their biggest state. And it's actually in the same town that I go to college in now. Mm-hmm. Well, went to college. I just graduated.
Okay.
But
okay.
So I shot open and bow hunter my junior and senior year of high school. I kind of shot bow hunter and then open. And I don't know. I shot not that many S3DA tournaments because I was only in it for 2 years. I got a super late start compared to everybody else
right.
in the pro class now. But so if it wasn't for this program, there's definitely no way I would have ever started archery.
Right.
So kind of a short career in S3DA, but it was super cool.
Yeah, and it's obviously worked out because you were telling us while you were in college you had some pretty cool experiences that you probably wouldn't have had without archery, right?
Correct, yes. It was. I'm extremely thankful for the University of the Cumberland's their archery program, and if it wasn't for S3DA and that program, there's no way I'd be shooting at the pro level now.
Mm-hmm.
So I just finished up my fifth year there, and I keep asking them if I could come back for a sixth year of eligibility, and they keep telling me no, but
right?
I guess it's time to move on, like,
yeah.
at a point.
So what does that look like now, like, when you're moving on from there?
I keep telling everybody, it's basically the same, just minus college. So I'm going to continue to work at S3DA for now and continue shooting
and
at the professional.
And you can still shoot at the professional level then, obviously.
Correct.
It's just you and your sponsors instead of...
Yes, so it'll just be more of an individual sport now, because in college it can be turned into more of a team sport. The one time that archery can be a team sport. So now it's just me and my dad and my brother, basically.
Okay.
Yeah.
So at the pro level in college?
No. So in the college divisions, they just have, like, the divisions they have here at S3DA.
So you just started shooting pro, like?
So I went pro when I was still in college.
Last year you were shooting separately. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. So there are collegiate tournaments, and that's when you shoot, like, there's, like, male and female for bow hunter, open, compound, and then, like, bare bow and recurve. There's four different divisions.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you all shoot together. So, like, the pros shoot with, like, everybody in the compound class. And then the ASAs and the USATs are where they have the pro classes. And that's the ones I go to, like, on my own.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
I gotcha. So now it would obviously just be the pro stuff.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit what that looks like.
I shoot all of the ASAs. And then I started the 50-meter, the USAT stuff, pretty late. So I shot, like, a handful of S3DA tournaments at 50 meters. And then my freshman year outdoor target season got cut short. Like, we had a few practices, and then we got sent home for the year because COVID.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't get to shoot that tournament or that season. And then sophomore year, they had Youth World Archery Championships or team trials, mm-hmm. and we had no idea what that was. We just showed up. Like, we paid the money, showed up, we practiced, and I ended up making that team, and we went to Poland that summer for Youth World Archery Championships.
Nice.
But that was kind of like dipping my feet in the water with 50 meters. So
okay.
I still shoot all that, and
I'm
like
thinking
it.
Poland's just a little more than dipping your feet in the water. But
we did not know what we were signing up for at all. So
yeah.
That's a cool story.
It was. It was right? super fun.
Yeah. So we talked a little bit over there about your partners as a pro shooter, your sponsors.
Yes.
So number one, plug them. Who are you working with?
I shoot for Elite Archery and Black Eagle Arrows and Conquest Bars, and then my release and sight are Trueball and Excel.
Okay. So for the shooters that may be in college now or they're in high school and they're like, their goal is to get to the pro level, what does that whole process look like for them as far as like picking up sponsorships? Do they come to you? Do you go to them? Is there an in-between?
It goes
both
ways. Do you
have to know people?
That does help. That helps a
lot.
Usually
does.
Yeah. But really just, like, market yourself well. Put yourself out there. Like, go to as many shoots as you can mm-hmm. and really just put yourself out there in front of the sponsors.
Okay.
And the more you do that, the more they see you, the more likely they are to be like, hey, or, like, when you go talk to them, they might know who you are from
right.
going to so many events and putting yourself out there.
Okay. So most of these companies, obviously, even here, are at these events.
Yes.
And it's going out there and shooting and making an impression on them.
Yeah. That's a big part of it. Yes,
yeah.
for sure.
Okay. And obviously, they want good shooters, so be a good shooter, too.
Yeah, practice as much as you can.
Uh-huh.
Definitely, like, my freshman and sophomore years of college, I put in a lot of time. Mm-hmm. Like, I need to go back to that. Like, I don't know, junior, senior, my fifth year kind of got busy, and I haven't practiced as much
Senioritis.
As I should. Yeah, maybe
yeah.
a little.
Mm-hmm.
But if I went back to, like, practicing that much, like, that's really what helped, like, boost me to get to the pro classes.
Yeah.
So, really just putting the time in and the work in.
So, at the pro class, are you shooting against all ages, men and women? Is it women's classes?
Yeah, women's classes.
Is it? So, are there age limits to that, too, or is it just
at a
18
certain,
up or whatever?
Yeah, it's basically like the USATs. It's like 21 and up. Everybody's in the senior class.
Okay.
And that's like their pro.
Is that so everybody can go to the party after and they don't have to check IDs?
Unfortunately, I don't know. Maybe.
Okay.
if you're on the cool
don't
kids
worry,
list,
nobody's
I guess.
Listening. Don't worry about it.
So with the USATs, it's like 21 and up, and then I think maybe the senior age is like 55. I'm not
okay.
sure. Yeah.
Okay.
And then at the ASAs, like, I don't know. You can either shoot like the high school class if you're still in high school, or you can shoot like known 40, unknown 40, known 45.
Okay.
Yeah, and then they just made the women's known pro class at the ASAs last year. And then that was my first year going pro, so it was super cool. It was the first year for the women's known pro class.
Mm-hmm.
Before, the women either had to shoot the pro class with the men if they wanted to shoot pro there, or they could shoot unknown. And,
okay.
yeah, I'm not a judger. I wish I was. But
yeah. So you want known.
Yes, I'm a known shooter for sure.
So okay. they added a class because of the sport, women's sports growing?
Yes,
excellent.
And Paige Pierce really pushed hard for that. She's, like, one of the best shooters in
okay.
the world for
right.
women.
Okay.
And she pushed really, really hard, worked hard to get women there to shoot known pro and, like, prove to the ASA that that class would grow, and it just continues to grow this year. Even like London had like 26 girls, and that was like big for our class, so
yeah.
it's super important that we like boost those shoot offs. Like last year, the women's known pro class wasn't on Sportsman Channel, it was just on like the Competition Archery Media YouTube and Facebook Live,
mm-hmm.
and we really tried to like boost those shoot off videos on YouTube and get a lot of views. And so this year our class is on the Sportsman Channel.
Very cool.
So that's pretty cool.
Yeah,
yeah. Paige
right.
has advocated for that class a lot, so big props to her for that.
For sure, for sure. So how did Olympics work with archery? Can you Because, like, used to, it was, like, amateur. You had to be amateur, everything, right? So, if you're shooting at the pro level, can you shoot in the Olympics?
Yes. So, compound archery isn't in the Olympics, unfortunately.
Right.
So, maybe, like, 2028 in L.A. or something.
Right.
But for 2024 Olympics, it's only the Olympic recurve class.
Okay.
So, the Olympics for, like, compound would be, like, the World Games or, like, for the younger, like, younger kids, it's like Youth World Archery Championships, like mm-hmm. that's the highest you can get. Or like they used to have like the Youth Olympics, I think. I'm not
okay.
sure if they do that anymore, but
okay.
so maybe one day compound archery will be in the Olympics, but for now it's just Olympic recurve.
So yeah. for now you're not an Olympic shooter just by technicality, really?
Yeah, I'm not sure I'd be very good at being an Olympic recurve shooter. Props to them. So,
right. Yeah.
Yeah,
couldn't do that
it's
either.
A different world.
It is, yeah. And, like, Team USA men this weekend are in Antalya, Turkey, trying to win spots to go to the Olympics in Paris later this summer. So, fingers crossed they get those
right.
spots.
Yeah, right,
for sure.
The women already have their spots locked up.
Oh, well, of course they do, right?
Hopefully the men get that. There's three really good shooters over there, so hopefully yeah. they shoot well.
Cool. So, is that something that, like, maybe you'd think about trying to do? Like, is that an aspiration?
No, definitely no. not. Hopefully, aspirations of maybe compound archery going to the Olympics. And
right, that's what
yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
if,
yeah,
that,
yeah.
if that was ever an option.
Yeah, for sure. I'd definitely try to put the time in and try out for the team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be good for your sponsors.
Yeah, that'd be super cool. But
you'd like, have to start charging them more money.
Maybe, hopefully. I guess also the Olympics for, like, compound is like the World Cups. Like,
okay.
For to make Team USA, you have to go to, like, all the USATs and then be on, like, the top four, and then you get to go to the World Cups. That's how I went to Turkey last year. So,
okay.
Yeah, super
cool. So you're
cool.
top four then?
Last year was better. Well, the year before that was better, and then last year it was, like, super windy at all the USATs, and I didn't have a very good year. So that's why I'm not on the World Cup circuit this year, but maybe
of the
next
wind.
Year. Yes, me and the wind do not get along.
I understand. I don't.
You'll have that.
Yeah.
Like you said, we're deer hunters, so we don't like the wind either.
No, probably. Nobody does.
No. So do you hunt also?
Not very much.
Not
so
very much.
I went
okay.
antelope hunting in Wyoming like 2 or 3 years ago.
And with your bow?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, with a compound bow.
Okay, good.
Yeah, and I think I shot the antelope at like 40 yards. So it was a close shot. I was glad.
But it was known.
We're
right?
whitetail
yeah,
hunters.
Yeah, I used a range
there
finder.
You go, right?
Yeah. 40 yards isn't all that close.
Well, out there, I'm
out
lucky
there,
it was
yeah.
like
right.
80 would've or 90 80. Yards,
right.
I guess.
Yeah, which I'm
yeah.
sure you would have been fine.
Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, unless the wind was blowing.
Yeah, and then I might be in trouble.
Right, right.
But maybe since I'm done with college now, I might have more time to hunt,
yeah.
deer hunt at home in
yeah.
Kentucky. So,
you ever done much of that?
No.
This is a hunting podcast,
yeah.
that's all I have to ask.
So, when I shot S3DA, I was drawn for a hunt at Fred Pape's farm. It's in, like, western Kentucky.
Okay.
And I went and hunted there for, like, it was, like, Halloween weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's a good weekend.
Yeah. Nothing walked in front of me, didn't get a shot on anything. But it was definitely super cool.
Yeah.
Fred Pape's is in Pape's Archery?
Don't know.
Okay.
I'm not sure
right.
on that.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not
there
sure.
What put her on the spot?
Yeah, there used to be a big archery company, Pape's Archery.
I've
I don't know if
that's
sponsored.
That.
I didn't know if Fred there was a sponsor or not. My bad.
Fred definitely could sponsor that, but I don't know if it's him.
Yeah, cool.
So, and then, like, we have S30A, like, work meetings now at Fred Pape's farm, so I think we might get to go back there this fall and hunt. So maybe I'll get to go hunting then, and that'd be
go.
Super
nice.
Cool.
So you're full-time with S30A?
Yes.
Okay, what's your day-to-day look like?
Depending if it's tournament week or not. If it's a okay. tournament week, it's usually like Monday through Wednesday, either in the office or at my kitchen table working. And then I'll work in the car on the way to the tournaments and
nice.
Then work in the evenings after
yeah.
I'm done shooting. If it's a normal week, it's usually just either at my kitchen table or in the office behind a computer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Where's the office?
In Williamsburg, Kentucky.
Oh, okay.
So it's the same town that I went to college in.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So that works out.
Yeah, the office is like 5 minutes from my apartment.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Nice. Then that works out with your shooting schedule because you obviously can work remotely.
Sometimes, yes.
Yeah.
It works out pretty well. Yeah.
Okay. So which comes first? We won't tell them.
No.
Depends on the day.
Okay.
Good
no,
answer.
Depends on if the wind's blowing or not.
Good
if answer.
My work phone rings, it'll come first. But
yeah. Yeah, we'll go with that. Cool.
Yeah, but definitely wouldn't be where I am today without S30A or the University of the Cumberland's archery program and their
awesome.
Coaches.
So you're pro shooter, you got like a big following on social media or anything?
You can follow me on Instagram. I think it's...
Talk about me putting her on the spot.
She knows her Instagram. I was just
Maybe.
Trying to lead her into it.
Oh, okay. All right.
I think it's MadisonCox_36.
She thinks.
Yeah.
And
right.
then my Facebook is Madison Cox Professional Archer, Madison Cox. I have two of them. So,
okay.
Yeah, I try to post on both, but
Heck yeah.
okay. sometimes
we'll
I'm
get
not
you some
very
followers,
good about
hopefully.
That.
Yeah,
yeah, hopefully.
Absolutely.
More sponsorship dollars. The more followers you get, the more money you can charge
yeah.
your sponsors.
The more marketable you make yourself, the better.
Exactly.
She went to college for that.
Yeah, I forget. Well, thanks for coming on, taking
yeah.
the time out of your nice day.
Hot day here.
I was getting ready to say, very hot, yes.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Absolutely.
Hey, everybody, I appreciate you tuning in for another episode. If you don't already, go over to Instagram and Facebook and give us a follow at Ridge Hunter Outdoors. We also have a private Facebook group called Ridge Hunter Nation where you guys can have some input on the show. You can ask us questions. You can ask upcoming guests questions. You can tell us who you want us to have on and what you want us to talk about. And on top of all that, just use it as a regular hunting group. Share your stories, your success, pictures, your failures, whatever it is. That's all at Ridge Hunter Nation on Facebook. Our website is ridgehunteroutdoors.com. That's where you're going to find more info on the consulting and management services that we provide. We also have the podcast posted on the website with some other content as well. And we have our merchandise and our food plot seed. And if you find any of that stuff that you want, make sure you use the discount code RHOPOD. That's all caps, no space. And you get 10% off your entire order there. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or anywhere else that lets you do so, make sure you rate and review. That helps us, and give us a follow there too. YouTube, our channel is Ridge Hunter Outdoors. You can subscribe to that, hit the notification bell so you know when everything comes out. The podcast will be posted there, as is our Fall Pursuit show, which we'll have more of coming up next season. You guys can go back and rewatch everything that we did this year. We had 10 episodes on that. We're hopefully going to do some turkey hunting this spring. And of course, we'll have all our off-season content on YouTube as well. So thanks to everybody who already does follow and subscribe. If you don't, make sure you go do that. Now let's get back to the episode. All right, we got Brianna on now from the Army Corps of Engineers. Introduce yourself to the people. Let them know who you are, what you do, and then we'll kind of get into a little bit about your guys' role in putting all this on.
Sure. So my name is Brianna Whitley, and I'm a natural resources specialist with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers at Wren Lake. Been here for almost 9 years, and I've been here every year for this event, so it's great to be out here again this year.
Cool.
9 years you've been with the Corps of Engineers,
yeah.
Huh? So have you had the same role for the past 9 years? Has it been evolving?
Yeah, I pretty much have. I actually started as a student intern and then recently got hired on full-time.
Okay.
But my role is a little bit different. I do the public outreach and media type events.
The interviews.
Oh, lucky
yes,
us.
Yes, interviews.
Right. Oh, excellent.
Right. So, and I'm the photographer for our special events. So
okay.
That's the great part about this. I get to go out and meet people and be it basically all the events that we do, and mm-hmm. It's a great time.
Tell us a little bit about then, like, obviously you guys have helped tremendously with putting this event on every year.
Mm-hmm.
And what does your guys' role kind of look like in all of this? Is it providing the space, obviously, and you guys take care of the trails, I guess, and stuff like that? So, like, I'll let you talk a little bit to that.
Okay. So we secured a contract with S3DA through our Wren Lake Area Tourism Council to host this for 3 years. So
okay.
This is the last year for that contract, but we're hoping that they come back because this is a great event.
Mm-hmm.
So our role is to help publicize the event to our local community and gain sponsors. Well, our tourism council really takes care of that, but get the word out to the public that this is a special event happening here. And then, of course, we manage the facilities here. So we're here at beautiful North Markham Recreation Area, and our team works really hard in the months leading up to this event, clearing the ranges, making sure that there's not vegetation in the way when it comes to the shooting ranges, and really just preparing this facility for thousands of people. So that's a really awesome opportunity. And then day of the event, we're just around making sure everyone's safe and filling the waters and just kind of being the boots on the ground when things need to be done.
Yeah. So how many people do you guys have here today? Do you know?
On our team?
Yeah.
So we probably have like 7 people that are just kind of here throughout mm-hmm. the day. And then we have a team of like 5 people who are here from sun up to sundown basically for the whole weekend.
Right.
Looks like you have a fairly good amount of local support as well from sponsors as well
volunteers.
As volunteers and community work.
Yeah, we have really great partners. So I mentioned our Wren Lake Area Tourism Council. They go out and get sponsorships from the community. They reach out to the hotels to make sure there's lodging for all these youth shooters and their family members. And they are just really kind of a critical component in all of this. And, of course, they get to spend the day out here talking to all the people. And it's amazing because we have shooters from all over the nation. So it's a great opportunity to meet new people.
Yeah, for sure. So the Corps obviously has been a partner in this for 3 years, you said.
Yeah.
So what is the... I don't want this to sound bad, I don't know how to put it, but like, why does the Corps want to help with this event? I guess it'd be the best way I could put
it. Yeah, that's a great question. So you're kind of asking, like, what's the significance of hosting this for us, right? Sure. So for us, really, the main significance is the economic impact, because we have hundreds of shooters, thousands of spectators that join them. And so that's thousands of people that are staying in our local communities, spending their dollars at our local restaurants, our local activities. And so last year is estimated that this event had about a $700,000 economic impact, $7,000 economic impact on the surrounding communities. Mm-hmm. So for us at Wren Lake, you know, our mission, of course, is obviously, one of our missions is economic impact on our local community. So we're really excited that we can have people here and then go out and see the communities and then hopefully return as visitors.
There you go. For sure. For sure. That's your guys' main goal is to bring people in to your park.
Yeah,
that way they
absolutely
can see it, enjoy it, and then maybe come back for future stuff.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Because you guys do have a really nice place here and really like really in general. And it's amazing to me how, because obviously we do podcasts at different shows, and we go out of state, and we do work out of state and stuff, too. So a lot of people know where Wren Lake's at, and, like, they've either been here for fishing trips or, like, camping and stuff like that. So it's really cool that you can bring this many people in from this many different states to an event like this.
That's true. We like to say we're a recreation destination. Anything you want to do outdoors, we offer it here. And here at North Markham, this is, like, a little treasure that I think a lot of people don't know about, because we have this beautiful archery complex that has a 20 shooting ranges of a 3D trail, an elevated platform, bags to practice on as well. Mm-hmm. So there's just so much to do here. And I think a lot of the people that come for this event, they see that and they're always excited. I've talked to people who've been in the tournament now for 2 or 3 years and they're always excited to come back to Wren Lake. So that excites us. Yes. Yeah,
that's what you want.
Yep, no doubt.
So let's talk a little bit about your job with the Corps of Engineers.
Yeah.
So what's your day-to-day look like with them?
When you're
not here sweating at an archery tournament.
When I'm in the air-conditioned office. my primary role is education and outreach. So I do a lot of educational programs with kids. We have a visitor center that we operate, and I'm primarily responsible for ensuring the operation of the visitor center. So for those listening, come check out the visitor center. Uh-huh. We have 9 live snakes, some fish, a turtle, and then, of course, all kinds of cool displays about Wren Lake. Mm-hmm. So that's primarily the day-to-day. I manage our social media and just help the public answer the phone, answer their questions, and then do media news releases, things like that.
So what are some other events or stuff that you guys help out with or maybe have coming up?
Yeah, we do a lot of different special events throughout the year. We just finished our annual Beach Blast event, which is like a water safety festival that we put on at South Sandusky Beach. Mm-hmm. Throughout the summer, we provide free educational programs at our visitor center every Saturday from Memorial Day through Labor Day. And those are all usually STEM-oriented and often feature live animals. So that's kind of a fun thing
to do. My daughter really
enjoys
those.
Yeah, they're awesome. And they're free, and there's not many free things in the world. So we love that people can come take advantage of that. So just all kinds of fun things going on throughout the summer.
Cool. You mentioned you're a social media manager, so why mm-hmm. don't you go ahead and plug your guys' social media. Where can people find you guys and maybe find out about these events and stuff like that?
People can find us on Facebook. So if you Facebook us, it's the Wren Lake Project Office /Visitor Center. That's where you'll find the most up-to-date information about our events and programs, all kinds of things Wren Lake. They're all there. And then our official website, if you Google Wren Lake USACE, that'll take you to our website. And our Tourism Council operates a website as well. That's just WrenLake.com. So that's a little bit easier for
folks.
Yeah.
There you go. Okay. Well, I appreciate you stopping by.
Yeah, thank you.
And taking a little bit of time out of your, I'm sure, busy day.
Yeah, thanks so much.
And talking to us and telling us about the event. Appreciate it.
Thanks for being here.
Yeah, no problem. Back in studio now to close this thing out. Hopefully you guys enjoyed the show. I know we really enjoyed doing it. We got to talk to a lot of great guests. Ricky, Benji, Madison, and Brianna were all great. We just want to say thanks to them for coming on, joining us for a few minutes, taking that out of their busy day.
to talk to us about the sport of archery and the whole event and what it really means to the youth and what it's for. You got to see from a lot of different perspectives, from a current shooter to Coach Ricky, who's there looking for shooters, to Madison, who came up in S3DA and now is a pro shooter. And then Brianna kind of brought it together with the Army Corps of Engineer and their role they play and just giving that S3DA a place to hold this event. It is such a great event, and you heard Coach Ricky talk about how much it's grown over the years, and that's really encouraging to see. I love to see the kids out there shooting and enjoying the sport of archery, and hopefully it continues to grow in the future. There's just so many benefits to it. But I want to say thank you to Holly Helton, Steve Groom, and the entire S3DA, again, not only for putting on the event, but for having us out and letting us be a part of it. We really appreciate that. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Like I said, we had fun doing it, and I always like going out and doing these remote events because it's just a little bit good to have a change of pace every now and then, and you get to meet new people, and you guys get to hear from several different guests on the same episode. So if you guys enjoyed it, let us know. Stay tuned for the next one. We'll be bringing that to you guys soon here in another week. I'm going to try to get some Full Draw Fridays out as soon as I can. I don't know if I'll have one this Friday or not. It's just been crazy busy with the weather finally drying up and getting food plots out and that kind of stuff. So whenever we have another Full Draw Friday, I'll let you guys know on our Facebook page. Make sure you follow all that stuff, our Instagram. And then we'll have another episode for you guys out Monday. I don't know who's going to be on that one yet, but it'll be a good one. So stay tuned. We will catch you guys then.